Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Greetings, Fungal Associates, and welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts, and my name is Alex Croson, and I'm alongside my co-host.
Hello, Alex. This is Casey. Clap two peas. John's my first name. Don't look that up.
Hello, John.
How dare you? I've never gone by John. It's always been Casey. It's my middle name.
I think on discovering that you were a John, I was surprised because you were very much a Casey.
Yeah, honestly, I feel the same way, literally. And honestly, I think so does my family. Everyone who knows me is like, yeah, you're definitely not a John. John seems too generic. Sorry, sure. Every John out there.
Apologies to the Johns.
I'm one of you, just to be clear.
He's a self-hating John. This guy's a self-loathing John.
Wow, that's awful.
I will say you are one of those people that I think of you as your first and last name.
Yeah, I you know what? I get that a lot, honestly, it's a blessing and a curse because people remember my name often.
Right.
And I feel bad because I'm like, oh, what's up?
My mother was the same. Mm-hmm. She was Susie Kirk.
Yeah, see? Yeah, he's just like, well, we'll go get Zeus Kirk. Yeah, yep. See? Oh, well, we're trying our best.
Casey, we have a great tree to talk about today.
Yes, we do.
We also have something else in the oven. And I would say so to speak, but I mean literally.
What is the rock cooking? Alex?
I am currently 3 minutes and 30 seconds away from having cookies that are ready to take out of the oven.
You're kidding me. I knew you said you were going to do that, but I didn't smell any cookies. So I was like, he's probably not making cookies.
Well, they got it. You know, they're about 3 minutes from being ready.
Oh, I'm so excited.
They are low FODMAP, gluten-free chocolate crinkle cookies.
Wow. You must live in Portland, Oregon.
they're a bit of a monkey's paw situation.
Oh God, that is so much going on.
Yeah.
I'm such a not a purist, that's not the word, but I just don't do, like, I don't change things, I guess. One cookie recipe that I know by heart, which I make all the time, chocolate chip cookies, never stray.
Yeah.
Anything else, like, add something new to it, I'm like, no.
If I may, that's a bit of stomach privilege.
I think you're probably right, yeah. So,
some of us can't afford to eat, you know, good food.
Or just anything, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, sorry. You probably are honestly going to be a lot healthier than I am overall, because I just kind of eat anything. And I think that ultimately is going to be bad for my sugar.
Well,
or whatever.
I do believe that I will outlive you.
Yeah, probably.
But I also believe that maybe I will be the cause of your death.
Yeah, maybe. A little bit of both. That is like the definition of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
That's like a Greek tragedy where it's like, I don't know. I'm going to think about this and write a book about it. It's going to be good.
I think I may fell a tree on your head.
Yeah. All right. In a metaphorical sense.
No, it's literal.
Yeah. All right. That sounds good.
A Western red cedar.
a big one.
Yeah.
So I can't even run to escape it.
I've committed a crime not only against you, but against nature by cutting down a Western red cedar.
Wow. Yeah. You know what? People are still doing that. The big ones. It's really a tragedy. That's the big thing up in, Prairie Creek? Was that Prairie Creek?
Oh, no. Yeah. In BC.
Yeah, in BC. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're still doing it. And it's just so ridiculous. There's no good reason for it.
Is it Fairy Creek?
Fairy Creek. Yes. Fairy Creek. Okay. There's also Prairie Creeks, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, Fairy Creek, I believe is the one. Yeah.
There's also Buck Creek.
Keep fighting against it. Buck Creek.
And a folk artist who I love named Buck Meek.
Look at that.
Casey, in about 30 seconds, I'm going to go take these cookies out.
All right.
Before we do that, let me quickly say,
today
we are talking about the little leaf linden.
Oh.
And I told you before, do you remember I said this is like the beginning of a tongue twister?
Yes.
Like little leaf linden lies. Lies lazily. Licking
a lollipop.
Licking lollipops.
Like a lord.
Ooh, let's do the whole thing.
Okay.
Little leaf linden lies lazily licking lollipops like a lord.
Yes!
Casey, the cookies are done.
Okay, Alex, I'm gonna talk for 30 seconds. Alex, you're back.
I am back. The cookies are out. I might edit that whole segment out. I think it would be kind of funny.
And, I think that's fair.
And we chase those sort of things here.
Yeah.
Casey, what is the scientific name for the little leaf linden?
All right. The little leaf linden, back on track. It is Tilia cordata.
Cordata, of course, means heart-shaped leaves.
Exactly. That's precise. Thank you, Alex. Wow. You're good.
Are you proud of me, Pa?
I'm real proud of you. You're doing great.
Let's imagine that you and I, like every episode, are walking through a little forest.
Oh, I love that idea.
And we come across a little grove
of
little leaf lindens.
Yes. So these little leaf lindens, they are native to Europa.
Wow.
So for those of you who may not have been familiar, Europe basically used to be an entire forest. It was a huge, big, deciduous forest, really similar to what the Eastern United States used to look like.
Uh-huh.
And not only that, but they also share a lot of the same species. So it's a reason I believe that you have such a... why the like America, United States is so like absolutely Europeanized, you know?
Hmm.
Of course, there was all this colonization, but all the plants were the same. They were just a little bit different. So we have other species of lindens, and we call them also basswoods. So linden, basswood, over in Europe, they would call it the lime tree. And so we have like Tilia americana, we have Tilia tomentosa, Tilia, the other one. Oh, what is the other one? No, maybe those are just the ones I'm thinking of right there, just those two. But those are two like popular species. We have them here all over the place. And there are something like 45 species. So, as you know, anyway, they're from Europe is what I'm saying, but they're so similar to the ones we have here. Anyone who's seen a linden has probably seen either this species or like two others.
I see, but specifically today we're on the little leaf.
Yes, exactly.
And what an adorable name!
Oh
and,
my god, have you seen the leaves?
Casey, I gotta say,
they're little.
They're little.
They are. They're little and they're adorable. Like they are. They are maybe, I don't know, silver dollar size, maybe a little bit bigger. And of course, they're heart shaped. They have these little tiny serrations on the edge. The leaves are they're heart shaped, but they also have like ears. So like a heart shaped leaf, generally has like the lobes of the heart that kind of go up, mm-hmm. right? These ones do that, but they also are kind of like bent in a little bit, kind of like a spade or something, where they're kind of bent upwards, a little wavy on the side. So they look kind of like they're cups a little bit.
Yeah.
And
like a mouse may stand beneath one and catch the rainwater in its mouth.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. What a delightful like imagination or imaginatory vision I see with that.
Thank you.
So the thing about the lindens is that they're big trees. So they grow up, the little leaf linden, I think, can get up to like 80 feet tall.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's in like the really perfect conditions, but generally about probably 60 feet on average. They grow, we plant them over here all the time. Very popular street trees, in fact. We've also planted them as like big kind of specimen trees because they have these big, gorgeous canopies. Like they get big and kind of oval, rounded tops. And they tend to grow more or less straight up where they have like one single main stem with branches that come off in kind of arcs off of that stem.
A little fountain-y?
Yeah, it does. So it ends up getting these kind of like ovally triangular shaped canopies.
Mm-hmm.
And they have these little leaves, of course, so the texture of the whole tree is very pleasurable. It's kind of like, in my opinion, it looks similar to an aspen in sort of the leaf texture. They don't flutter quite as much, but you have that same like still texture of these little tiny leaves, like little silver dollars covering an entire tree.
I will say the leaves look quite kind of tender.
Yeah, that's an interesting term.
Can you recall the feeling of the leaf between your fingers?
Yes, I can. Usually it's somewhat sticky.
Oh.
And it has, it's just kind of flat, you know, very like, blade-like in sort of, I guess I'm thinking of like a grass blade kind of thing.
Like a matte finish?
Yeah. Matte finish. And then you can't really feel maybe a little bit of the veins on the bottom, but nothing too special. Like they don't jump out at you for texture in your hand.
Casey, let's talk bark.
All right. So the bark of this tree is another one of those standard tree barks, in my opinion.
I have a new word for this.
Oh, come on, I need one.
Utility bark.
Oh, okay. It's got utility bark. There's nothing to it. It just does its job.
It's just bark. It's kind of an afterthought by the tree. It's utility bark.
I think that's
standard
fair.
Issue. They go stand in a line to get this cheap sort of just like multi-purpose mass market utility bark.
That's exactly what it is. That's a perfect description.
Great.
It's got utility bark.
Can we use that from now on?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm going to use it everywhere now. I'm going to put it in a book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You better credit me.
This is utility trademark bark.
Yeah.
Well, so the one thing that does stand out about it is
trademark.
Thanks for that cough afterwards. Yeah, trademark. Yeah, you're right, though. I should have said it.
I'm too slow to do it in the moment, so I let you get halfway through your next sentence and interrupt you to say trademark.
Hey, honestly, I'll take it. You can interrupt me anytime.
All right.
Except when I'm talking.
Yeah, I was going to say, careful with that license you're giving me.
Yeah, I just revoked it quickly.
It's a hell of a green light.
I interrupted myself to revoke me saying you can do that. Well, it does, I will say, end up getting some interesting characteristics as it ages. It starts to kind of split and get like these cross hatches kind of going on, where it builds up these ridges that kind of look like long sort of X's or S's that kind of constantly overlap going up.
Yeah.
So they have a very fine texture. They're usually flat on the outside, so they're not very scratchy or anything like that. It's very standard gray. It gets lichen on it, the little white it looks like paste or something that someone like painted on the side.
Oh, little bird poop lichen?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. And a lot of people think it's really bad for the tree. It's not. It's just living on the outside of the bark, chilling.
Cool.
But it does that, and then usually as it ages, it can get little bits of moss and things like that growing on the outside as well.
Mm.
Other than that, nothing real fancy. It's not a very fancy tree, and it doesn't jump out and like demand to be seen. You know what I mean? It does, though, Alex, demand to be smelt.
Okay, Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking. Yeah. I was about to say to you, well, Casey, what does it do?
This tree, Alex, is the best tree in like mid-June, early June,
okay,
due to climate change now. But what happens is it has these lovely little flowers that come out. And the flowers are kind of like standard issue flowers, I would say.
Hmm.
The only difference is that they really are tiny. They're tiny, but they are ambitious. It's got 5 sepals, 5 petals, 5 staminodes, which is basically they just kind of mash those all together. And it has a bunch of flowers that come out on one fruiting or one inflorescence is what they're called. They're really gorgeous little flowers. I mean, each one's about the size of a dime or smaller.
Wow.
But the reason that these flowers are so spectacular is that they come out with a little bract, so a little leaf that's modified at the stem or the base of the stem that's holding on the to the leaves, which I think is, what is that? It's a peduncle. And so this, the flowers come out, they separate out into basically an umbel, which is this flat-topped kind of grouping where each one kind of comes out, branches. Now you have 2 flowers. Each one of those branches into another 2 flowers. So you get this kind of like spreading flat-topped flower bunch.
Okay.
And at the base of that very first stem is this one big bract that comes off, and it kind of flips out kind of like a surfboard that's kind of bent backwards. And then this little thing comes out, and all these flowers bloom all at the same time all over the entire tree.
Wow.
And they are delightful.
Do they smell good to us?
They smell so good to us, Alex.
What do they smell like?
They smell like the classic floral thing. Like a little bit of citrusy to it, but not like too much. And not like a rose where it has like that very specific rose kind of scent.
Yeah.
But you know, if you just like smell a flower and you're like, that smells like a flower. Like not a specific one, just general generic utility flower.
Okay. Oh, okay.
This is it.
This is shaping up to be a utility tree.
This is a utility tree for sure. So it just, I love the smell of it. And they come out in June when it gets warm in like the middle of the day. The nectar just starts flowing.
Wow.
And the entire tree, and like these get, you know, pretty huge, you know, 60 feet tall. This tree is usually planted, historically at least, in like big rows where you would have multiple down an entire area.
Okay.
In Corvallis, actually, near where we used to live,
uh-huh,
there was a road lined with them all on one side. And we would just, you'd ride your bike down, and on the right side would be all these huge mature trees. They would all bloom at the same time. And you would just have this like 4-block experience of just flavor everywhere, like
wow,
the most delicious scent of like perfect, like, wow, this, it smells fresh, it smells gorgeous, like it wasn't overpowering, it wasn't like so sappy that you're just like, I can't get, ugh.
That's the real flavor country.
Yes, it's exactly what it is. Get out of the way, that one guy. No, Flavor Town, whoops.
Oh.
Who was that? That's the...
Guy Fieri.
I was about to say, who was that guy? Guy Fieri.
It was that guy.
Yeah, it was. It was that guy. Which guy? Man, that's a who's on first waiting to happen.
We're just not good enough at comedy to figure it out.
Yeah, we could have done that.
We know the premise.
Anyway, you guys make your own jokes. So it has these amazing flowers. They will bloom throughout the, basically, a couple week period. And then they turn into these little balls, like probably about the size of, half an acorn. Like they're just these tiny little things.
Hmm.
But each one of that that inflorescence becomes an infructescence, which is just all of the flowers, the flowering part all put together is what it's called.
Okay.
And that comes down, and now instead of having a bunch of, say, you know, 7 or 8 flowers coming out on all these little stems, now you have all these little teeny tiny balls. And those little teeny tiny balls are like hardened nutlets, and that is what is then left on the tree with that big bract, and that's a really great ID characteristic. And it's hard to like describe this, but you basically have a bunch of these little tiny circular balls connected to this like very very thin lanceolate bract that comes off over the top. Almost like I said, it looks to me like a surfboard that's bent backwards, or like just a little canopy over the top of these little things.
Yeah, it's a little tongue like.
Yeah, there you go. It's hard to describe though.
It is. It looks weird. We'll put photos of it on the Instagram post for this episode.
Super good ID characteristic. If you see that on a tree, that is a linden tree. It's something in the Tilia genus for sure.
It's so odd.
It
like,
is.
What a weird combination of components.
It is, and it doesn't make any sense. Like I don't think anything really eats these seeds inside those little nuts. So I really don't know.
So the nutlet is a byproduct of the flower?
It is, yeah, because that's where a fruit comes from. Right.
Is it a mature ovary?
Exactly. It is a mature ovary, and specifically, it's a nut-like drupe, not a nut. So I should be clear with that.
Well, Casey, I know that there is an animal, perhaps an insect.
There is.
That just goes crazy.
There's multiple.
Okay, but you know the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, I know the one you're thinking of.
There's a lot of buzz around this insect.
It is the queen of the castle.
And there's a very sad, almost comically sad.
Almost comically sad, but it's not as sad as the other ones that we've talked about. This is a sad story that just dips down and then gets better.
And as we've said before, tragic tales are best told after a quick break.
And a cookie.
We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary and cookies.
Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man. I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
That sure is right.
That is Goodr. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there and then picked up a pair of sunglasses and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
like, I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
the
day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6, or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
She's incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized. Yeah.
Oh, well, these would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh, yeah. What did you get?
Mine are called, Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex. I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for completely arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving Completely Arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Hey, let me ask you this. You ever taken a walk and just felt inspired? Maybe you discovered your new favorite restaurant or popped into the library and found a book that you really wanted to read, or you're like, hey, I think this car dealership used to be a Taco Bell. Well, there's a podcast about this kind of thing now with comedian and actor Alan McLeod, one of the funniest guys. It's called Walking About. It's a new podcast that treks into the simple joy of walking and its connections to health, history, creativity, and of course, community. In each episode, Alan invites a friend to share a little stroll and see where the sidewalk takes him. Alan McLeod has guests including Mike Mitchell, Spoon Man, Spoon Nation for Life. You got Colton Dunn. You got Janet Varney, Eva Anderson, Whitmer Thomas, Gabrus, Ed Begley Jr., Catherine Spears, Andy Richter, and of course, Burger Boy, Nick Weiger. Some of the funniest people. You know this podcast is going to be an absolute hoot. Maybe you could even listen to it while you're taking your walks. So lace up your podcasting shoes and listen to Walking About out now, wherever you get your pods. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking the Little Leaf Linden. Mm-hmm. Casey That's and right. I are munching on a cookie.
These are so good, Alex.
Thanks, guy.
I don't want to chew on microphone.
Our apologies to anybody who suffers greatly from misophonia.
Yes, and if you are into it, you're welcome.
Remember how much we used to eat on the podcast?
Oh, yeah. We're hungry, hungry little hippos here. I mean, come on.
What the hell happened? Why did we stop eating? I think we let the listeners get to us.
Yeah, people were like, yeah, we should never do that. We should bend to what the listeners want.
I agree.
What are we?
I mean, I do agree. Okay.
Mm.
The cookies have been consumed. And Casey, there's another thing that is consumed. It is the nectar on a little leaf linden. And today we have a tragic tale.
It is. It's so tragic, Alex.
About bees and their love for these trees.
That's exactly. The bees love these trees as if it is their own knees.
Mm.
Please.
Wow. That was pretty good.
Thank you. All right. So here's the situation. So a long time ago in a city far, far away called Wilsonville. Wilsonville is a lovely city.
Wilsonville, Oregon, by the way.
Yes. Sorry. Wilsonville, Oregon. I don't mean to throw them under the bus, but this just happened there. You know, this is what happened.
Yeah.
And essentially, it's a suburb of the city of Portland. In 2013, there was this huge event that happened. Now, before we talk about that event, we should talk about, again, these trees are covered in tiny little flowers.
Yeah.
And not unusual, but semi-unusual for big trees like this, their flowers are pollinated by insects rather than wind. So compare that to an oak tree or a chestnut or a beech or a maple, any of these other big, like, you know, kind of shade trees.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, they don't put all the effort into getting enough or to working with an insect in order to pollinate them. They just use the wind.
Okay.
The wind just goes for it, at least up here in the sort of temperate regions, right?
I see.
So that is One thing that sets the linden tree specifically apart. There are other trees that do this, you know, don't get me wrong, but this one specifically goes out and sets out to find the lovely pollinators that we know and love, bees.
And they do that by making good smelling and beautiful flowers, yes, that the bees want to hang out in.
Exactly. Yeah. So okay, the smell is the nectar essentially, and it is what draws the bees in. They eat the nectar. They also eat the pollen.
Oh, they eat the pollen.
They do. Yeah, they eat the pollen. That's one of their big things. They put them in those pollen sacks. I guess technically they give it to their little youngins.
For some reason, I thought the pollen getting on a insect was sort of incidental.
Yes.
And the tree was like,
you're absolutely right, but it's also a little bit of both, you know, where you just need one pollen grain to land on one other ovary or one other stamen so that it gets taken down in, right?
I see.
Or pistil, I'm sorry. I keep on messing those up. This is the worst.
Hey, don't talk about my friend Casey like that.
You're right. I'm sorry. I'll apologize to him later. So you have these delicious smelling things. They get a bunch of insects that come over and pollinate it. Because I should add, it is not only bees that do pollination. In fact, male mosquitoes are big pollinators.
Wow.
Yes, a lot of people really hate mosquitoes as a broad subject.
Right.
It's actually only the female mosquitoes.
Interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
They need to feed their young, so they need high protein diet, and they use us for it, or other animals.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
Also, beetles can be a pollinator, as
yes,
is the case with the southern magnolia.
Exactly. And bees are a really interesting subject. How we manage them is really interesting, and it's not quite as bad as you would expect, but it's also still pretty bad. I'll explain what I mean in a second.
Okay.
But suffice it to say, linden trees get hundreds of bees all over them every single year during their bloom period.
This tree is like a fucking clam bake.
It is, yeah.
It's so huge, and the concentration of flowers is kind of startling.
Yeah, so this is covering an entire tree, and in this, I think it was a Target parking lot.
Yeah.
They had them growing there. Now, the other thing that lindens get, the other insect that they tend to get a lot of, are aphids.
Oh.
And the reason for that is kind of unknown. I can't really find something that says, here's why, other than saying that the lindens have a lot of good sap that they just enjoy. They will go into the leaves and the stems, and they will suck out the sap. And the trees usually are just like, meh, whatever. They deal with it. They don't mind. They don't put a lot towards defense.
Hmm.
So they just get all this sap taken out of them. But the thing with those little insects is that they are not looking for the sugar water. Once they get enough sugar that they, you know, need to survive, they're filtering it out to get other nutrients from the tree that are going through. So they're looking for other macronutrients that the tree is taking up, right? So as they go for it and they suck out all of the juices from the tree,
mm-hmm,
they have all this excess sugar water, which essentially is just completely, you know, useless to them. So they just drop it away. We call it honeydew.
Wow.
You've heard of this. You're familiar.
Yeah. I mean, like, kind of, oh, maybe I'm thinking of the melon.
Ooh, yes. So it's not the melon. Yeah.
Do these grow into melons?
Wow.
Wait, melons are aphid urine? Casey,
yes.
You are blowing my mind this week.
Listen, this is a big week. We're talking about a lot of different crossovers and genus and species and things.
What if I just misunderstood everything you said on the podcast and I had this crazy base of knowledge and science?
Oh my gosh. I would be so, that would explain why everyone likes it so much. Everyone's like, yeah, no, they don't know that they're completely missing each other.
Yeah. And I would be just like, I would just be like traveling around and like hawking my magic.
Yeah. And it was like, wow, he did, that aphid turned into a melon. I didn't even know that was real.
To the power of belief.
Well, we call it honeydew. It drips down on cars. And if you've ever parked underneath a tree and you've ever been like, wow, this tree's dropping sap all over my car.
Mm.
It's probably not. It's probably actually aphids or other scale-like insects that do the sucking of the leaves and the twigs, dropping their honeydew onto your car.
Right.
Because you can wash it off literally just with water and it dissolves it away because it's literally sugar water. That's
right.
All it is. So you end up getting this in mass. And because these lindens don't put up any fight, this happens on all sorts of different trees, conifers, broadleaves, everything.
Mm.
Just to different amounts. So you have all these aphids, right? And you're over literally a parking lot. So people are like, well, I don't want this to get on my cars.
Yeah.
Or in this case, if you were the company, I believe that no one even complained. They just said, well, we know there's lindens. We know that someone will complain. So let's spray them with a pesticide to end up getting rid of all of the aphids.
Okay.
So
it on its surface, as a layman, it doesn't sound like that bad of an idea.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound like that bad of an idea.
Please continue.
So, if you are to kill a bunch of insects, you use an insecticide.
Right.
An insecticide is generally something that will kill any insect. And so there's a couple different kinds. There's like a broad spectrum pesticide, and then there's a more specific pesticide. The more specific one would kill a very specific type of thing. You know? There are some that will make that will attack just about anything. So if you kill one insect, you're killing all insects.
Wow.
Because they're just everything's the same. They have the same basic build. So if you kill one, you're killing them all.
And the insecticide used here was
Dinotefuran, also known as Safari. Mm. So there's like the scientific name, and then there's the product name. The product name in this case is Safari.
Okay.
Super common. It's used all over the place still to this day. But what they did is they came over to these linden trees, and they just squirted them down with these big hoses that just, you know, throws all these pesticides. And there's all sorts of regulations about it. I really don't like using them for multiple reasons. We can talk about that later.
Okay.
But essentially, they did this when the lindens were in bloom. You do it when the lindens are not in bloom, then there's no bees that are visiting.
Yeah.
You can just crush all of those aphids and you don't have to worry about it. So you do it when the bees are there, you not only kill all of the aphids, you then kill all of the visiting bees. And then, literally, in this case, more than 50,000 bumblebees died.
50,000?
50,000. And there's pictures. We'll post this from Xerxes.org, which is it's the Xerxes Society for It's the Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation.
That is a tongue twister.
Yeah, right?
Thank you. Can I try?
You may.
It's the Xerxes Society. What was it?
The Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation.
It's the Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation.
Yes, we did it.
That's like a vocal warm up for theater students.
Well, so if you click on or if you go to this, they have a really cool information, just kind of a document about it, a whole page, and it's literally called the Wilsonville Bee Kill.
Wow,
that's the name. You just Google it, and it comes right up. It's not
Damn.
Even. It's like Xerxes.org/Wilsonville Bee Kill.
Damn,
it was a huge deal in Oregon when it happened because obviously, Oregon is a place that has a lot of environmental conservation minded folks.
Mm-hmm.
We also have people who are caring about if we kill everything all the time. And there are pictures where it looks like someone just took a bunch of like rocks and just kind of tossed them out over a parking lot underneath the shade of this gorgeous tree. And the trees are tiny. Like these trees are maybe like 20 feet tall. Like they're little trees in the grand scheme of how big these trees can get. And it just looks like the ground is littered with little pebbles. Each one of those pebbles is a bumblebee.
You know, when you're like when you're like walking on a sidewalk and there's like a bunch of little black berries and you're like crushing berries under your feet.
Yes.
You like can't not walk on them.
There's so many.
That's what this looks like.
I know. And it just,
there are just bee corpses.
It just crushes you. It's
everywhere.
So sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, in this case, like I said, 50,000 bees were killing and everyone got so incensed about this.
Yeah.
And the reason they got incensed is because at the same time as this was happening, again, in 2013, there was a lot of media and a lot of coverage about bees getting killed in mass around the United States, around the world, due to this new, I think it's now a fungus is what they found, or a bacterial infection called colony collapse syndrome.
Oh, right.
And essentially, just they would have, you know, bee hives, which I should be very specific. A beehive is the boxes. It's a manufactured artificial home for bees. A bee nest is something in a native situation, like they're in a hollow of a tree or something.
Good
That's
distinction.
A nest.
Good distinction.
So in beehives, these colonies were just dying for no reason. Like, they couldn't figure out why, over the course of X amount of time, like 90% of all the bees would just perish for no good reason. So they're trying to figure out what exactly is going on there. And it's not... It's a complicated issue, and if you want, there's an Ologies episode that talks about this.
No,
you can also find a lot of information about this. It got covered by a lot of different outlets.
Okay.
However, this was a big deal at the time. People were still trying to figure it out. They're very worried about pollinators not being able to pollinate all of the gigantic fields of oranges and almonds and all these other different kinds of things that are growing down in, say, California or in any place that needs pollinators to pollinate the crop so that then we can eat the food after that.
I see.
So everyone just goes and freaks out. And it's like, and you guys killed a bunch of bees on a whim because you just failed to think through what you're doing. And it was a big deal. Everyone got really upset, and it's totally worth being upset. No one complained, as far as I have heard, about there being any sap on the cars.
Right.
The sap can be washed off in an instant. And in order to reduce this small inconvenience of having trees shade your parking lot, reduce the impact of the urban heat island effect, reduce the impact of all of the carbon in a literal parking lot that's getting pushed out by cars that are idling, coming, going, parking, things like that. You got all these great benefits from the trees. You have to deal with a little bit of sap. Come on. Who cares?
Yeah.
And now, because of that, people basically said, yeah, let's shift our priorities a little bit. And now, I think in the UK, or not the UK, I'm sorry, the EU more broadly, as well as in Oregon, we are banning the use of these kinds of insecticides, which are known as neonicotinoids.
I've heard this word before.
It kind of became, pun not intended, a buzzword.
Yeah.
Because a neonic is what they call it often, are really specifically good at killing insects. And neonicotinoid means it's like a new nicotinoid. And I believe it comes from the base chemicals that are nicotine. And that's, you know, a plant produces that so that it doesn't get eaten by insects.
Wow.
So it's a great pesticide to be used if you're trying to really, you know, destroy something. The problem is, if you use it all the time, you're just killing insects en masse without having that specificity where it's like, I want to only kill this one insect that's a pest. But instead, you have to kill them all.
Here's my question.
Yes.
Who dropped the ball here?
Oh, gosh. You know who dropped the ball and who should have known about this? The people who were doing the spraying.
Okay.
So
a private company?
It was a private company, okay. Yeah. So the private company is the one who was initially doing it. And they were hired and they said, yeah, you know, we could spray this and kill all these things. Sure. When do you want it done? Like, we can put you on the schedule for this date. Put them on the schedule, go out there. Now, whenever you're using a pesticide, I am a licensed pesticide applicator. The biggest thing that they tell you, I mean, even if you go to a conference and you hear a talk and they're talking about anything that has to do with pesticides, mm-hmm. they have to say, read the label.
Yeah.
That is the biggest thing because the label says everything you can possibly do with it, when you can do it, when you can't do it, if it's poisonous. And they have like different levels of poison. Like, this is like, nah, it's not so bad. You can probably drink it. And then there's stuff that's like, if this gets on your skin, you need to go wash, you know, your entire body, burn your truck, and don't go in near people for 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So they have all these big things that, you know, separates everything out.
I see.
All for good reason. It's all for regulation. The problem is these things are regulated by people who have done like the revolving door. They work for Monsanto. Then they go work for the Department of Agriculture. Then they come back. So the labels are meant to be very specific, but they also are, like, still allow you to do certain things and still say may instead of shall, and like these tiny little nuances. Someone didn't read the label, or the label didn't say it at that time. Maybe they weren't so caring at that point, because people were spraying this kind of stuff, killing bees all over the country for years. And then everyone's like, whoa, we got to stop. And they're like, well, bees are just there. We don't really care. We just want to get rid of this bug and that other bug that's on all of our crops.
So the label may not have specified, don't spray tree while it's in bloom.
Exactly.
Okay.
So now a lot of them will actually say specifically, like, you may not spray this on linden trees during this time of year.
Well, at least there was a lesson learned to some extent from that awful tragedy.
Exactly. And that's the real big thing. But the colony collapse as well, like, we're learning lessons about that. It is not the native nests that are collapsing. It's only the hives. And essentially they would have these things on trucks, and they will drive a bunch of hives from, let's say, Oregon in early spring in the eastern side. and the bees will just be over there going crazy. They'll be doing all sorts of stuff. Then they will take them down south into California during the off season when it's too cold for bees up here. The bees will keep working, and they never get that rest. And bees, like anything else, they go through seasonality, right?
Yeah.
So they will die. All the drones will die, and then you have the queens that will kind of chill there for a second, and then they build their colonies back up the next year. Mm. It's the natural progression of, you know, the way these super colonies and these colonies work. However, what they were doing is basically making them work year-round and moving them around. So the bees were essentially getting exhausted, and they didn't have the opportunity to build up immune systems and to start over, and you had things that were not evolving where they had generations kind of doing stuff. So, and then on top of that, we'd be killing off a bunch of them because of pesticides, because we've been trying to just spray all these trees because we don't want anything on it. We want this perfect like tree growing with nothing around it. But Alex, we've talked so many times about ecosystems, haven't we? Where if you do that, you're also killing all the insects that would help with the ground.
Right.
You're killing all the beneficial insects that would kill off all of the bad insects, or at least keep them level and balanced to a situation to where you don't need to spray anything. You can accept a tiny bit of loss so that you can have a full ecosystem working in your favor rather than trying to kill everything. Then all of a sudden, some of those bugs don't die.
Yeah.
It's like, uh-oh, what are we going to do now? Then you invent another chemical based on petroleum. It just, the rabbit hole of our use of pesticides and specifically insecticides is just causing a huge, huge amount of just trouble. You remember DDT, of course, Alex. Mm-hmm. do you really?
I've heard of DDT.
Oh, yes. Okay, perfect. I thought I was just going to throw out this thing like, oh, of course, you remember old DDT.
I don't know what it is, but I remember that acronym. What is DDT?
Oh, yeah. Look it up.
Oh, I see. Let me remember here.
Oh, yes,
oh,
please
yeah,
do.
I think I remember. Isn't DDT an insecticide that was used extensively in the mid-1900s to kill mosquitoes?
That was it. Yeah.
I just recalled that from my brain.
Yeah, you're so good at that. You're like a black hole that always pops out the right thing.
Yeah, I'm kind of like a computer or like a Google.
You are. You're basically a Google.
So if it sounded like I Googled something, it's only because my brain is like Google.
Is like a Google, exactly. Yeah. Well,
as far as I remember, it's a... sorry, Casey, one sec.
No, please do.
I think it's like a synthetic organic compound. Like other chlorinated aromatic hydrocarbons, DDT tends to persist in the environment and become kind of concentrated in animals at the head of the food chain.
Oh, that's right. Yes. See, I even forgot that.
Yeah, well, its use, I think, is now banned in many countries.
It's true, Alex. Well, you have just hit the nail on the head, where that's what we did. It would kill every single creature, and then birds would eat those creatures, and then this is where the book Silent Spring came from by Rachel Carson. Famous book, and famously opened people's eyes to this problem, where it's like, we can't just spray chemicals everywhere willy-nilly.
Yeah.
There's videos of like kids running behind trucks.
Fuck.
It's so awful. And they're just like walking around like, oh, let's just go. It's like street cleaners, except they would just spray DDT.
And they're like running through it like a sprinkler.
Yeah, exactly. And then they probably went in, hang out with the cats and everything, sleep in their beds. And like, this is the 1950s. Everyone showered, you know, once a week after everyone else did.
Wow, man. That's like, by the way, if I recall, I think DDT, the formula for DDT is 14 carbons, 9 hydrogens, and like 5 chloride.
You know, Alex, I'm pretty sure that's right. And I'm also just confirming that by memory as well.
Yeah, we're pretty smart.
Yeah.
You know, like we've just like so many of the topics we talk about on this podcast, I feel like my big takeaway is a reminder of sort of the oversight and greediness of human beings.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a bummer, but it's also, I think, a lesson that like we should be like pounding into people's heads.
I agree.
It's pretty, I mean, like that's such like a dumb, selfish, like animalistic thing to do.
Yeah. Just kill everything that is even remotely not for us.
Yeah.
And in our favor because it's not for us.
It's bothersome.
Yeah, exactly.
And not think about the fact that nature is a delicate web.
Yes.
And everything is connected.
And that is where I also get frustrated with the hubris of humankind and this is something that I just finished The Overstory, actually, which congrats. I have to recommend. That's a very good book. Like, it's worth the hype. But they, at the end, discuss specifically that kind of thing where it's like, we just, you know, we're not thinking at the right level. We're not understanding. We don't see. Well, and that's the other problem that I want to bring back to our tree topic here today, mm-hmm. is that we are talking about the little leaf linden tree. Now, the little leaf linden and other lindens, of course, but our Tilia cordata is a gracious, gracious tree. Mm. It will give out its sap freely without care to all of these little scale-like insects.
Yeah.
These scale-like insects then are eaten by other insects, not scale, I'm sorry, the aphids. Aphids are eaten by a myriad of other insects.
Ladybugs,
great example. Praying mantis, mm-hmm. love to eat these things. Mayflies, I think mayflies? Sawflies. A bunch of other kinds of flies. In fact, we can release these. You can buy them at stores and send out these predatory insects. Those predatory insects help keep these populations in check. Keeps the linden happy. Then those are eaten by birds that love to do this. Chickadees are famous for just jumping around in little groups, I guess. They fly to a tree and they just go through the whole thing at Mach speed, just rip off all these little teeny tiny insects.
Wow.
So you get all these little birds that would eat these insects, and then other insects, they'd eat those insects, and then birds eat those things, and then you develop these whole ecosystems, right? So you have a tree that then also provides these gorgeous flowers. Those flowers are then used by bees. Then you get these wild, huge populations because there's a lot of different kinds of bees. I think Oregon has like 50 or 100 some species of bees.
Wow.
Just in and of itself. Not the big ones, not the bumblebees, not the ones that are in nests, like singular, you know, individual bees that just have a little hole in the ground. They just like chill, right?
Hmm.
So you have this tree that is gracious, that grows and does everything we could ever want it to do. It's a gorgeous tree. It releases all of what it has to the rest of the world and creates this like really complex ecosystem within its one canopy. And then we humans have to come around and we say, no, 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 no. Graciousness is not something that you give. It's something that you have to purchase, or you have to buy, or you have to in some way monetize. Thank you. And then you end up finding that, you know, people are like, well, in order to monetize it better, we're going to kill all the things that you are being gracious towards.
Mm.
And there's a part of me that just really doesn't like it.
Well said, Casey. Yeah, I agree. What Casey said. And I think that's a great point to get into our review.
All right, let's do it.
Of the little leaf linden. I think we should also give a bonus cone rating. We've never done this before.
Oh, my God.
To bees.
To bees? Bees are specifically bumblebees.
Honeybees.
Honeybees. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. Right. No, we're giving a rating to the concept of bees.
All right.
So we'll give our final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Casey, resident expert, dendrologist extraordinaire, we begin with you.
All right. So I'm a little sour. I'm a little sour today because I hate when people do these kinds of things. And I am going to try, Alex.
Oh, the insecticide?
The insecticide, yeah.
I meant making podcasts.
Oh, no. I love this. This is spectacular. No, I don't like it when people do these things. Like, it bothers me to no end when someone's just like, oh, well, I'm just going to fertilize. Wow, I'm just going to kill all these things. It's just like, stop.
Yeah, just slow down.
Yes, just slow down.
Just like, take a second.
Yeah, walk gently by and realize there's no problem. Anyway, I will say, though, it is super annoying to have honeydew fall down all the time. I lived underneath another species of tree that did this, and I could not sit in my backyard unless I was underneath a thing, because in the middle of a blue day in August, you would just feel raindrops hit your face.
Oh, my God.
It's just like, I hate this.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating. I get it. I understand it. But at the same time, I have to say, I was sitting in the shade of this gorgeous, huge tree. And if I am considering the little leaf linden and trying to give it a rating, I am taking into consideration not what I feel about it in terms of it raining on me, because I very rarely go underneath it. I'm trying to think of the tree in and of itself.
Yes.
And then add in, you know, not necessarily my interactions with it, but my opinions of its interactions.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that a good distinction?
And weirdly, it does make sense.
Yes. Okay, perfect. So, The little leaf linden is a lovely tree. It doesn't get very tall, it doesn't do a lot, and it's overplanted. It's not that overplanted, but it's a commonly planted tree. Its only great thing are the flowers.
Okay.
I love the flowers. I love it, Alex. I could ride my bike down a road in June and smell these flowers for hours.
Mm.
It powers.
The eyes. I saw you.
Me. we got like the bee's knees and all these. Man, all right.
Anyway. You're doing it great today.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm trying
You're really
my best.
Coming into your own as a podcaster.
Rhymester.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, so honestly, the tree is, that's the only thing it's got going for it. But you know what? Other than that, the tree's just fine. 6.5. The tree smells great. And if I was standing underneath it right now and I was just cruising my bike by, I'd be like, oh yeah, this tree, 7.5.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a 7.0 as an aggregate score across all seasons.
Okay, great. And bees?
And bees, I'm going to give bees... I'm going to give bees a 7.6.
Okay.
The reason I'm going to give them 7.6 is that there are other pollinators, so they get a little hype, you know? It's kind of like everyone's like, yeah, what's up? That's the best. And it's like, well, you know what? Come on. There's other things that do that.
Yeah.
I don't know why we chose bees. Maybe they're the most obvious. Maybe they're the ones that people get stung by, so they like freak out about them. But
yeah, interesting.
Yeah, they're also the kind of jerks, you know, sometimes like if you're walking by and they're kind of upset at you, they will attack you and try to kill you, especially if you are in any way allergic.
Yeah.
But I love solitary bees. I think they're the cutest things.
They're like, really adorable.
They're just little fuzzy things and they just kind of walk out and like hang out and some of them grab things. I like them. I like them.
They make a cute little sound.
7.0
Golden Cone.
Yeah, 7.0 Golden Cone. I'm going to go 6.8. I'm going to leave it at 6.8. I'm going right. to stop.
I'm locking in.
You're locking me in.
6.8 Golden Cones of Honor. For the little leaf linden from dendrologist Casey Clapp.
That's right. What about you, Alex?
I'm going to be a little tough on the linden here.
What?
To me, there's like almost nothing special about it.
Yeah, there's really not a lot. Okay, that's fair.
This is a utility player.
Uh-huh.
Even in nature, it's a utility player because it provides, it's just puts all of its points into pollen.
Mm.
I don't think the flowers are that attractive. I've never smelled them.
Wow.
So I don't know for sure what they smell like. All right. But I have no emotional attachment to this tree. I feel nothing. I'm a void.
You are just stone cold right now.
I don't give a shit about this tree.
I feel like this tree, you like go to a store and you're like, hey, how's it going? And it's just like, hi. Jeez, I was in a great mood till I talked to this tree, and this tree's just so stone faced.
Yeah,
could I get a Snickers, and it just like drops sap on you.
I'm gonna shock you here.
Oh God,
4.0. Now this is with my new Michelin star style rating.
Yes, okay.
So
that's
like,
fair.
It gets
the fact that it got one star.
Yeah, yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
It gets a little under to 5.0.
Mm-hmm.
So
all
it's
right.
a 4.0.
It's a 4.0.
And I don't even care enough to give it a decimal.
Wow.
Or an integer.
Stunning. It is not an integer. It was a good effort.
I've been taking a math class since like 2003. Bees, I give like a 9.
A 9?
Yeah.
You're going as far as a 9.
Golden drops of honey.
Golden drops of honey.
The bees are great.
I do really like honey. Yeah. I didn't even think about
see,
that,
See, this is the difference between them and other
wow.
pollinators, is they make something that we eat and is delicious.
That's true, and I do really, really like honey.
Yeah,
that's,
I've seen you eat honey.
Yeah. All right, that makes me feel a little bit bad now.
I've seen you get your hand stuck in a honey pot like Pooh Bear himself.
Yeah, and then I got stung by all the bees
that
were above me.
And you're wearing a red sweater and no pants.
I don't know why. Sometimes I just like to go do it.
Yeah. It's your version of going commando.
Yeah, I guess it is.
That was our review of the little leaf linden and the bee. Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A.
All right.
This week's question is from Lucy Baldwin. Lucy says, my first question, my parents love plants, so our yard is full of shrubberies and such. In the corner that contains our sewage leach field, We have a young mulberry tree.
Due to
all the extra fertilizer it gets, it has grown very tall, and it also has huge leaves. One leaf is about the size of my face. Why has the tree put its excess energy into making its leaves huge rather than making more of the normally sized leaves? Do malnourished trees tend to have tiny leaves?
Mm-hmm. This is a great question.
Your fungal associate, Lucy A. Baldwin.
Thank you, Lucy A. Baldwin. The answer to this question, I guess these questions, are yes, trees will respond to the amount of essentially nutrients that they're getting and the conditions. So water, nutrients, and things like that. So if you have a tree that is in, say, compacted soil, it's got a little bit of disease, it's not getting enough water, then those trees will tend to have smaller leaves. And that's a way to tell if it's stressed, is that it is trying to put out leaves that are normal sized all the time, or at least as big as it is like genetically able to get.
Normal for it.
Exactly, correct. And they would try to put it out there, but if they can't, they would say, well, this is as much as we can do here, and that's where it's going to end. And so if you're doing diagnostics on a tree and you see trees like, well, this is a big leaf maple, but those are tiny leaves, this tree's stressed for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And in this case, because this tree, probably does have a lot of fertilizer going to it, which is just the effluent becoming nature again, those leaves in that tree is probably just supercharged. And so it's like, yeah, I'm going to make big leaves because this is how I can get the most bang for my buck. Make bigger leaves.
I see.
But also, you have leaves that are different sizes on different parts of the tree for any normal tree in any normal situation, where the big new tree or the leaves on new shoots a lot of times look different. And a lot of times they'll look different because, say, the new shoots want to really get a lot of energy. Maybe it's from a stress point, or maybe the tree is growing and it needs to get as much energy as possible to that stem because that stem's growing really fast. Then the leaves would be a little bit bigger. Sometimes they, down in the shade, they're a little bit bigger because the leaf basically wants to get as much possible sunlight as it can. So it's going to have a bigger pad for light to get through the canopy, whereas it's going to have normal size leaves that the tree doesn't need to put more effort into in kind of the middle mass of the tree, because it's like, oh, well, I'm getting enough of this. There's not a real urgency to have bigger leaves. There's no benefit to it. So it's not going to put more effort into getting a big leaf.
I see.
Yeah. So that one's, that's kind of it. So probably it's doing a little bit of everything here except being stressed. It's really happy. So it's putting on big leaves where it can, but where it doesn't need to, it's putting on its normal size leaves. It's not stressed because if it was, it would have little leaves or littler leaves.
Interesting.
Last thing, that's actually why we use fruit to tell fruit and flowers to tell trees apart, because even just in one tree, you can get so much variation in what the leaves look like. So if we said, oh, that's a big leafed maple, but then you see a littler leafed big leaf maple, then you say, oh, that must be a different species. It's like, no, same species.
Does stress in a conifer come across in the cones?
I know they should be about the same size almost every time. There is fluctuation in the size of the cone, but you'll see that in the new shoots, how big the new shoots are coming out, as well as the size of needles. One of my old professors did that and ended up correlating the size of the needle on white bark pine up near Bend, I think.
Mm.
Basically said, yeah, it's actually littler needles every year on average if the year is not as beneficial for the tree. Maybe, a little bit more drought, less water, snow lasted too long, something like that.
Interesting.
And then if it was a really good year for the tree, the needles would be just a little bit longer.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There you have it. Jinx.
Wow, thank you.
Thank you, Lucy, for your question. If you have a question for Casey about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. Or send us a voice memo with you asking your question. We could even play it on the podcast. That'd be fun. Follow us on Instagram at arbitrarypod. That's ArbitraryPod. Or join the Patreon to support this podcast. For $5 or $10 a month, you can become a part of the Arboretum and get 2 extra episodes a month on trees and related topics, or the Cone of the Month Club and get a unique cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist every single month in your mailbox.
It's beautiful.
Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson.
I'd like to dedicate this episode to the 50,000 bees who lost their lives due to human ignorance and stupidity.
Beauty. I agree as well.
Lovely.
That makes me feel good.
Sincerely, completely arbitrary.
Good luck, you guys.
Thanks for listening to Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clack.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.